the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider on this final weekend in March. Only 3 weeks of Lent are left. Easter's on the horizon on April 20th. We rejoice at the thought of the resurrection and also at the news that Pope Francis is once again in the Santa Marta residence, having returned there last Sunday. An update on the Pope in a minute, along with the rest of the news. This past week, we marked one of the most important feast days of the Church, the Annunciation, the day when Mary said yes to the angel Gabriel, thus to God's plan for her life. And the Word was made flesh, and our Redeemer was conceived, the one whose passion, death, and resurrection we will commemorate in 3 weeks. I mention this because this week, instead of an interview, I present a special on the Shrine of the Holy House of Loreto, a beautiful and historical shrine in Italy built to house the dwelling in which Mary received the angel Gabriel, in which the Annunciation took place. But now, how did that home come to Italy from the Holy Land? Tune in after the news. Now, the week's news highlights. Sunday, March 23rd. This, of course, was the biggest day of the week, certainly for the Holy Father, whom the doctors allowed to finally return home to the Vatican after over 5 weeks of hospitalization for double pneumonia. The Vatican had announced Saturday evening that Pope Francis would appear at a balcony of Gemelli Hospital on Sunday at noon, greet and bless people gathered in the courtyard, and then be discharged to return to the Vatican for a mandatory period of at least 2 months of recuperation. The pontiff's appearance on a balcony was brief. In a breathless, almost not audible voice, he greeted the crowd below the balcony and then, with a smile and wave, said, "I see the woman with the yellow flowers. Brava." It seems those roses made their way to the Pope, who, on his way back to the Vatican, made a detour to visit St. Mary Major Basilica, home to the Marian icon he so loves, Salus Populi Romani. Once there, he left a bouquet of yellow roses with Cardinal Macricus, the adjunct archpriest of the Basilica. While it was an important day for the Holy Father, it was a jubilant, exciting day for anyone in the vicinity of the Vatican on Via di Porta Cavalieri, as the white car bearing the Pope, about a dozen or more security vehicles with flashing lights, security officials on foot, etc., slowly passed by the large crowds of tourists exiting St. Peter's Square and visitors having lunch at outside restaurant tables. "Welcome home, Holy Father! Viva il Papa!" people were shouting. In a press conference at Gemelli Hospital on Saturday evening, the Pope's doctors advised the Holy Father not to meet with large groups during the months of convalescence and not to undertake any big events such as liturgies and not to overexert himself in any other way. At the Santa Marta, Pope Francis will continue certain motor and respiratory therapies and medications under competent medical supervision. Stressing that the Holy Father has improved enough to return home, the doctors nonetheless noted he is not 100% healed and added that much time will be necessary for his body to recover. The Vatican Sunday, as it has done in recent weeks, published Pope Francis's reflections prepared earlier for the Angelus. In those, he reflected on the day's gospel, and he used it to highlight the immense suffering of the people in Gaza, as well as all those who across the world suffer the consequences of war. Francis wrote, "I am saddened by the resumption of heavy Israeli bombing on the Gaza Strip, causing many deaths and injuries. I call for an immediate halt to the weapons and for the courage to resume dialogue, so that all hostages may be released and a final ceasefire reached." Monday, March 24th was a quiet day at the Vatican, but on Tuesday, March 25th, Pope Francis, in written remarks published by the Vatican, encouraged the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors, as it meets in plenary session, to continue its precious work to ensure that the Church is a safe place for minors and vulnerable people, and he emphasized the critical importance of healing survivors. The message was written while he was at Gemelli Hospital and was dated March 20th. Established in 2014, the commission is responsible for advising the Pope on the protection of minors and developing policies to prevent sexual abuse within church institutions in collaboration with Vatican offices and local bishops' conferences. As an independent body of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, which handles disciplinary actions regarding abuse cases, it provides recommendations on best practices, supports survivor outreach efforts, and promotes accountability within the church. The plenary ended Friday. Also Tuesday, Pope Francis is continuing with treatment, physical therapy, and concelebrating Mass at his residence at Casa Santa Marta, the Holy See press office noted Tuesday, as it provided updates to journalists on the Holy Father's recovery. The press office said the Pope continues some work activities, but is not currently receiving visitors, and that no decisions have been made regarding his schedule for the weeks to come. His convalescence time includes continued treatment of mobility and respiratory-related physiotherapy, especially for voice recovery, personal prayer, and concelebrating Mass at the residence chapel. Wednesday, March 26. As Pope Francis recovers in his residence at the Casa Santa Marta, he has called on the faithful to never lose hope, for God always grants us the possibility of starting over. The Pope did so in the text that had been prepared for the Wednesday General Audience, which he asked the Holy See Press Office to publish. Since his medical team discharged the Pope, calling for 2 months of rest for a proper convalescence, the press office continues to distribute the catechesis prepared for the audience, as it did during his hospitalization. In his catechesis series, focusing on encounters in Jesus' life, the Pope focused on the biblical episode of the Samaritan woman recounted in the Gospel of St. John. The Samaritan woman meets Jesus at a well, where he asks her for water and reveals that he is the Messiah. Through their conversation, he exposes her past, and he offers her living water, symbolizing eternal life. Transformed by this encounter, she leaves her water jar, runs to her village, and brings others to Jesus. After contemplating the encounter between Jesus and Nicodemus, who went in search of Jesus, and the Samaritan woman, the Pope observed that we are reflecting on moments where Jesus shows us that he is waiting right there, at that crossroads in our life. Thursday, March 27th. In a message to participants in the 35th Course on the Internal Forum, organized by the Apostolic Penitentiary, Pope Francis reflected on the privileged role of confessors, especially during the 2025 Holy Year. Celebrating mercy, particularly with the Pilgrims of the Jubilee, is a privilege. God has made us ministers of mercy by His grace, a gift we receive because we ourselves have been, and continue to be, the first to experience His forgiveness. Pope Francis invited confessors to be ministers of mercy as they accompany the faithful on their path of reconciliation and renewal. Friday, March 28th. This began the 3-day jubilee of Missionaries of Mercy. The Missionaries of Mercy, a group of priests granted a unique ministry to administer the Sacrament of Reconciliation with special faculties, was first instituted by Pope Francis during the Extraordinary Jubilee of Mercy in 2015-2016. There are today 1,258 Missionary of Mercy priests throughout the world. Well, those are the week's highlights, but now stay tuned for my special on the Shrine of the Holy House of Loreto. And say an additional prayer each day for Pope Francis as he convalesces.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN, to reach the world with a gospel message. EWTN is the most trusted source of authentically Catholic content on the air today, featuring Mother Angelica, Dr. Marcus Peter, and Father Wade Menezes. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
As As the largest religious media network in the world, EWTN has an important role in educating others about our Catholic faith and spreading the good news of salvation. We invite you to explore our numerous pages of historical faith documents, prayers, teachings, and other current issues in Catholicism today. Visit EWTN.com and click Catholicism. EWTN is the global Catholic network.
Have you ever heard someone say, "I want a religion that is not so dogmatic"? Well, G.K. Chesterton says a religion that is not dogmatic is not a religion. A religion means something that commits a man to some doctrine about the universe. Anyone who believes anything is dogmatic. In fact, Chesterton says a teacher who's not dogmatic is not teaching anything. An auto mechanic who's not dogmatic is not going to be able to fix your carburetor. We want professionals to have specific training, but specific training means embracing very specific ideas. And yet, we want a religion that's not dogmatic? As if standing before God is less important than repairing our car?
Spend more time with the Apostle of Common Sense. Visit Chesterton.org for more information and go to EWTNRC.com to discover more books and programs written and inspired by G.K. Chesterton.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome to my special on the Holy House of Loreto. Here, the Word was made flesh. Several years ago, as part of a series I was writing on shrines in Italy, I visited the Holy House of Loreto. It was my first trip to the Marche region and to this Marian shrine, and it was a never-to-be-forgotten weekend. Pope John Paul once said that the Holy House of Loreto is not an icon of abstract truth, but an event and a mystery, the incarnation of the Word. It is with deep emotion that when entering the revered chapel, one reads the words above the altar, "Hic verbum caro factum est," here the Word was made flesh. One of my visits was with the women of wine, women in the new evangelization. We visited the shrine of the Holy House as part of a pilgrimage. Once again, it was a beautiful, almost mystical experience. We had arrived from Assisi, a two-hour bus ride, just in time for the 10 a.m. Mass, after which we had more than 90 minutes to explore the Basilica and the Holy House and have quiet time for further prayer. We explored in small groups of three or four, admiring the magnificent side chapels and those of the apse, but spent most of our time in Mary's house. At one point, I spotted a Basilica volunteer and stopped to ask her where the American chapel was. In wonderful English, she replied, "Come, I'll show you." When we got to the chapel, Kathy, one of our group, was already there, and Sabrina, the guide, spent the next 15 minutes telling us glorious stories and historic details about the Holy House. We were riveted and felt so privileged by her presence. She also showed us several other chapels, in particular the stunning Spanish chapel, before we had to meet our group at 12:30. The Holy House of Loreto has, in fact, been one of the world's premier shrines dedicated to Mary for over 700 years. According to tradition, the home in which Mary lived, in which the angel Gabriel appeared to her, announcing she would become the Mother of God, and the home she shared with Jesus and Joseph, was transported by angels to this Italian hill town overlooking the Adriatic on the night of December 10, 1294. In the 3rd century, Mary's dwelling in Nazareth was already used as a place of worship. The site of the Incarnation then consisted of a grotto, venerated today in the Basilica of the Annunciation in Nazareth, and an adjacent three-walled house over which a synagogue had been built. By the 5th century, a more solid basilica had been constructed, and by the 12th century, it was protected by the majestic Basilica of the Crusades. Tradition says that when the Crusaders, protectors of holy places, were expelled from Palestine in 1291, the safety of the Holy House was in doubt. It was thus transported, and legend says angels had a hand in this, first to Illyria, that's modern-day Croatia, and then in 1294 to Loreto, a laurel-covered hill in what were then the Papal States. The name Loreto, in fact, comes from the Italian laurus, meaning laurel. The adjective is Lauretan. According to Capuchin Father Giuseppe Santarelli, author of numerous books on this shrine, recent findings show that the so-called translation, the move, of the house to Loreto occurred not through angelic ministrations, but through human intervention. A recently discovered document from 1294, in fact, testifies that one Nicephoro Angelo, the ruler of Epiro, gave his daughter, as part of her dowry for her marriage to the son of King Charles of Naples, numerous precious possessions, including the holy stones carried away from the house of Our Lady, the Virgin Mother of God. Other documents from the same period assert that a 13th century family named Angelo or D'Angeli saved the stones of the Holy House of Nazareth from destruction by Moslems and then had them transported to Loreto in the Papal States for safekeeping. Angelo means angel in Italian, and D'Angeli means of the angels. The part of Our Lady's house which can be seen today, the original three stone walls, is encased in a rectangular, ornately sculpted marble enclosure called a screen, which was commissioned by Pope Julius II in the 16th century and built according to a design by Bramante. The western external wall forms the backdrop for the shrine's main altar. The house itself is quite small, about 12 by 28 feet. Today there's an altar where the original house opened up onto the grotto. Above the altar is a small statue of Our Lady with child, clothed in the traditional dalmatic. The original 14th century statue, carved from cedar wood from Lebanon and darkened over the centuries by candle smoke, was destroyed by fire in 1921. The current statue was carved from a Lebanese cedar from the Vatican Gardens and was painted to resemble the earlier Madonna, though it is somewhat darker. The three original stone walls are barely 9 feet high. The masonry above them was added at a later date to accommodate a vaulted ceiling to make it more suitable for worship. Archaeological studies have revealed that the house had no foundations and was set high on a public road. Studies have also shown that the stonework is indigenous to Palestine and that the walls bear graffiti, words that are etched or written in stone, similar to writings in Palestine and especially Nazareth. One, for example, bears an inscription in Greek with two words that seem Hebrew, Lamed and Waw, W-A-W, that say, O Jesus Christ, Son of God. This same invocation has been found in the Grotto of Conan in Nazareth, alongside the Grotto of the Annunciation. About 60 graffiti have been found, many of which are considered by experts to be similar to those of the Judeo-Christians in the Holy Land, including Nazareth of ancient times. The technique used for the outer finish of some of the stones is similar to that employed by the Nabataeans and widespread in Palestine at the times of the Romans. You can also find Nabataean ruins and culture in Petra in Jordan. Five crosses made of a red material were found walled up among the stones of the Holy House. It's believed they belonged to crusaders or to knights of a military order that defended holy relics. Still visible on the north wall, one of the two longer walls, is the wood lintel where the original door used to be. Today, pilgrims enter and exit by two small doors created in the north and south walls. Entering the Holy House imbues the visitor with an indescribable sensation. When I was there, the silence was deafening. There is a definite feeling of awe, intellectual, physical, and spiritual. Some pilgrims, because of limited space only a few enter at a time, appear to be in a trance. Yet others, like I did, gently finger the markings on the 2,000-year-old walls, or simply lean against them for a time, as if to draw strength, as if to feel the presence of Mary and the Holy Family, as if to draw inspiration for prayer, and, perhaps just once in a lifetime, to say the perfect prayer. These hollowed walls seem like umbilical cords to our past, walls which, if they could talk, would let us hear Mary at prayer, Joseph telling Mary about his workday, Jesus as he cries, talks, or walks for the first time, the Holy Family around a table as they eat their nightly meal, perhaps with a guest. This was a family's home, and so you wonder, were there both tears and laughter? Were there hot, dusty days, cold winter nights, sleepless nights? Did the Holy Family ever wonder where their next meal would come from? What we know for certain is that this was a home filled with love. While millions of pilgrims visit Loreto each year, no one knows precisely how many have come since that December night in 1294. Just as the pilgrims are countless, so too are the miracles and conversions linked to Loreto. Over the years, many thousands of votive offerings have been left by the faithful for graces received, although only a few hundred are actually on display in the magnificently frescoed treasure room. The imposing Basilica of the Holy House was begun in the latter half of the 15th century. Enormous bronze doors set in the Renaissance-style facade welcome us to the interior, which is in the form of a Latin cross with a nave and two aisles. 12 side altars fill the right and left walls. As we reach the Holy House, the basilica widens to reveal 13 stunning chapels built around the north, east, and south sides of the shrine. These chapels were built with the offerings of the faithful, including those from France, Croatia, English-speaking American Catholics, Germany, Poland, Spain, and Switzerland. The artwork, frescoes, sculptures, marble work, and stained glass windows are of such striking, exquisite beauty as to leave the visitor breathless. Make sure you have an excellent guide or an excellent guidebook. The basilica is at the eastern end of the Piazza della Madonna and offers breathtaking views of the surrounding countryside and the Adriatic. It's flanked by an 18th century bell tower and 16th to 18th century buildings that house a museum, administrative offices, and those of the pontifical delegate to the shrine and the Universal Congregation of the Holy House. The latter was founded in 1883 for the purpose of spreading knowledge of and devotion to the Holy House of Loreto. The feast of the Shrine of the Holy House, as I said earlier, is December 10th. Loreto is a pontifical shrine. It has a special juridical status and is administered by the prelature of the Holy House. The prelate and pontifical delegate today is Archbishop Fabio Dalcin. Pope John Paul visited Loreto three times, 1994, 1995, and 2004. Pope Benedict visited Loreto in 2012 for the first time as Pope, but he had been there on seven previous occasions between 1985 and 2002. On March 25, 2019, Feast of the Annunciation, Pope Francis made a brief pastoral visit to the Italian city of Loreto, where he called the House of Mary a home for young people, families, and the sick, where all can find hope in an oasis of silence and piety. Now, in more detail, here's the story of the first stage in the journey of the angels who carried the Holy House high above the mountains and deserts of the Holy Land, across the expansive Mediterranean and Adriatic seas to Illyria. On May 10, 1291, it quietly set down in the little hamlet of Tersato in Illyria, again now known as Croatia, far from the battle cries of Palestine. It was early in the morning when the local people discovered, to their great surprise, a house resting on the ground. There was no foundation under it. Curious to see what it was, they ventured inside. They found a stone altar. On the altar was a cedar statue of Mother Mary, standing with her divine son in her arms. The infant Jesus had the first two fingers of his right hand extended in a blessing, and with his left hand he held a golden sphere representing the world. Both Mary and Jesus were dressed in robes. Golden crowns were poised on both their heads. The villagers were awestruck but confused until a short time later Our Lady appeared to the local priest and said, "Know that the house which has been brought up of late to your land is the same in which I was born and brought up. Here, at the Annunciation of the Archangel Gabriel, I conceived the Creator of all things. Here, the Word of the Eternal Father became man." The altar, which was brought with this house, was consecrated by Peter, Prince of the Apostles. "This house has come from Nazareth to your shores by the power of God, of whom nothing is impossible. And now, in order that you may bear testimony of all these things, be healed. Your unexpected and sudden recovery shall confirm the truth of what I have declared to you. Again, these were words to the local priest. The priest, who had suffered for years from an illness, was immediately cured. He promptly told all the people, and word of this gift from God spread throughout the countryside. Pilgrimages began coming immediately to the Holy House of Nazareth in Illyria. God had chosen to bring it to this little village, and the villagers lovingly responded by erecting a modest, quite primitive building over the house to protect it from the elements. However, the joy the Croatians had experienced at having this most precious gift in their midst was short-lived. 3 years and 5 months later, on December 10th, 1294, the Holy House disappeared overnight from Croatia, never to return. Saddened by the loss, Nicholas Frangipani, a devout man from Tersato, built a small church, a replica of the Holy House, on a hill where the original had stood. He placed there an inscription, "The Holy House of the Blessed Virgin from Nazareth, on the 10th of May in the year 1291, and left on the 10th of December, 1294. The people from Croatia continued venerating Our Lady in their replica church. So great was their devotion that Pope Urban V sent the people of Tersato an image of Our Lady in 1367, which was said to have been painted by St. Luke the Evangelist. The people from Tersato, or Fiume as it was also called, grieved over the loss of the Holy House and the image of Our Lady. A Franciscan recalled a group coming across to Loreto from Dalmatia as late as the 16th century. He wrote, "In one particular group, there were about 500 pilgrims from Tersato with their priests. They began their procession into the church of the Holy House on their knees, crying and weeping. As they approached the Holy House, they wailed in their own tongue, 'Come back to Fiume, O Mary. Come back to Fiume, O Mary, O Mary.'"
For more information on these stories, or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.